From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. My next guest, you'll know Clint Van Zandt, is a retired FBI agent, a security expert, an author, profiler. He's on television. He has more hats than Imelda Marcos had shoes, I think. And that's bad, isn't it? I thought I'd bring him on tonight to talk about a couple of different stories. Of course, the Holloway case is back in the news again, and he's written a very interesting article on Newsvine.com about the dating game serial killer, and we should talk about that because it hasn't been in the media much. Hi, Clint.
Hey, good evening, Dana.
Nice to have you. Also, at livesecure.org is one of Clint's websites. Let's talk about that right away. You know, $4. You're not making any money on this thing, but it's something that could save a life. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it really is. Well, you know, this is nothing that I take credit for other than supporting. There is a very smart woman in L.A. Long story short, she has two daughters. One goes to college in California. One goes to college at Yale. And within this last year, both of her two daughters knew young women who were victimized by sexual predators and murdered. Both times, in one case, a woman had access to her phone, but the predator was right on top of her. And all she could do was give this nondescriptive message to her parents that they didn't pick up on. In the other case, the young woman just didn't have a chance to get to it. And in both cases, this woman by the name of Jo Perry, she said to herself, "My God, I got two daughters. What can I do? How can I help my children if they get in a situation like that?" So she got together with an application developer in California, and they put together this iPhone app. It's known as Silent Bodyguard. As you suggest, it's available through our website at livesecure.org. But long story short, this is an application that can be downloaded to your iPhone, your iPod, for $3.99. And what it does, by pushing a button on that, information that, Dana, that you've already programmed into the phone for four different addresses. One, it sends an immediate text message and followed at the same time by three email messages. And it basically says, "This is Dana. I'm in a dangerous situation. Please send help or notify the authorities." But not only does it send that help message, Dana, but every 60 seconds it sends your exact GPS location and a Google map that shows where that GPS location is. And every 60 seconds, the application updates itself by sending the same help message out, but it sends an updated message or Google location exactly where you are. So, you know, if I'm receiving the message or something else, I can call the police, say my daughter, my son is in a threatening situation, this is their exact location, and we can pass that on, and hopefully, that will save lives. There are tens of thousands of people that have started downloading that, and again, it's the woman who developed it, and it's her application developer that are the brains behind this. But it just made so much sense to me, Dana, like you're in my background. We know that if we don't get a victim back in 6 to 12 hours, the chances of getting them back get slimmer and slimmer as time goes along. And for me, if I can put one more tool, one more electronic capability in the hand of someone, you know, I mean, people say, well, I'd rather have a gun or I'd rather have mace or I'd rather have, some other type of device. Well, that's your choice. But I'm saying this is something you can carry in your pocket. You can have your finger on it as you walk to the car. You can, if you have to, activate that application. And that calls the cavalry and it says, I need help, and this is exactly where I'm at. And what I like about it, Dana, again, is every 60 seconds, it's given me that new update.
Yeah.
And the application will be available for the BlackBerry within a month. And we're also now working on something that we thought would be a good idea, which would be like every minute, let's have a 10-second soundbite that the phone picks up.
Yeah.
So you can hear what's being said. In essence, if a victim says, why do you have a gun? Or why are you taking me to L.A. from San Francisco? We could grab that soundbite and have information, number one, to validate that it actually is an emergency, and number two, pick up some more intelligence.
Wow, and the website, again, livesecure.org, $4, that's pretty cheap insurance. And
$4 for life. I mean, somebody said to me, well, you know, $3.99. They said, is that $399? I said, no.
No.
$3.99. And they said, well, is that every month? I said, no, you don't understand.
Yeah.
iPhone applications, it's for life. You take it, you load it on your phone, it's yours, and it's there for as long as we're able to technically support that. And right now, we're having to go out and find a larger server because more people are coming online, and we want to make sure that, that application never drops a call.
Absolutely. The more the merrier. Again, go to livesecure.org, and it's important insurance, and it's cheap for sure, and it could save a life. Anyway, Clint Van Zandt is here, and I want to get your thoughts, Clint, on, Joran Vandersloot has confessed more about a crime that he's never been taken to court on or taken to task on. And again, he's being yappy, he's profiting. I think Dave Holloway was on the news here the other day saying he doesn't like that Vandersloot profits from this, and we even have a report of a possible Natalie Holloway sighting, or at least her remains, from a diver. And I've always talked about, and you and I have talked about this many times, that I don't like false hope. But if there was ever a family that needed some support and some closure, it's that family. But I'm curious your thoughts on the recent developments in this case.
Well, you know, you like I know the family. You've had them on your show many times. I was with them down in Aruba. I've been on a number of television shows with Beth Holloway Twitty. And, you know, I just know what a challenge it's been. Of course, that just destroyed their marriage and other things like this over the years. But, you know, you get Vandersloot. This is, you know, there's an old phrase, methinks ye protest too much. Well, in this case, I think he confessed too much.
Yeah.
You know, this is someone who, the judge in Aruba has said, this guy has told so many lies, we can't tell truth from fiction. So even if he confesses, that to the judge is not enough Aruban probable cause to pick him up and charge him yet one more time with murder. And he knows that, Dana, and this has become almost farcical for me. You know, when this story first broke, I was on Dan Abrams' show on television, and I referred to Joran Vandersloot probably as a sexual predator, as a young budding sociopath, and people went crazy calling in saying, how dare you, how could you say anything about this wonderful young man?
Yeah.
Well, we found out a lot of things that you and I know. He's not a wonderful young man if he's done everything that he's confessed to and everything that his name has come up, anywhere from, you know, trying to smuggle hookers back and forth between different countries and just all of the shenanigans that he's been involved in. But in this particular case, I think he realizes that no matter what he says, he's not going to be charged, like his father before he died allegedly said, nobody, no case.
Yeah.
And should his father have said that, it seems to have proven true after all these years.
Yeah, for sure. And the only thing we can hope is that what this person saw actually is Natalie. I'm doubting it a little bit, but, I don't like to see the family go through false hope. But if they check into it and it pans out to be something, fine. But any news organization that gives Joran Vandersloot 10 seconds of airtime needs to give their head a shake for sure. Clint Van Zandt's here, and he writes articles on newsvine.com, excellent articles, and one that caught my attention was the story about the dating game serial killer. Now, I'm looking at a picture of this freak, Rodney Atala.
Yeah.
With an IQ alleged to be that of a genius, is responsible for up to 50 murders and probably a whole lot more. Let's talk about this guy. We haven't heard much about him, but it's a story for sure.
No, you know, it's amazing. Here in the States, we're so caught up with health care reform that, you know, murders and kidnappings and missing people are falling by the wayside as, you know, we watch our government battle each other to a bloody draw almost. But, you know, now we have health care reform, allegedly. But in the case of Rodney Alcala, this is a man in California who was believed to have started attacking women, young girls, in fact, about 1968. In fact, that was when he attacked his first victim. This was a second grade girl that he was able to entice to come into his home. And Dana, this is a guy, he beat her in a second grade girl. Imagine how little that is. And this grown man takes a pipe and beats her in the head and beats her almost bloody, rips her clothes off, sexually assaults her. And fortunately, someone had seen him take this little girl into his house. They called the police. The police, I don't know, did what maybe you and I wouldn't do. They hit the front door without anybody covering the back.
Yeah.
So when they hit the front, the subject bailed out the back door and he was gone and on the run again. And this little girl just barely survived. And over the years, he's been a fugitive at different times. He was on the FBI's top most wanted list of fugitives because of the crimes he's alleged to have committed. But he was also on the dating game, this television game where, you know, three different men tried to sell themselves to a woman to be their date. And he actually won. He was the one who won. The woman said, "I want him for the date." But when she got to see him and start talking to him, she said, "You know what? This guy's creepy. I'm not going to go out with him." Well, she had something within her DNA, you know, her psychological DNA that told her this was wrong. Well, over the years, this guy has been involved with giving drugs with teenage girls, with committing sexual assaults, with committing murders, all the way from New York to California. And, you know, this true psychopath, he just saw other people that he would use them, abuse them, go on his way again. And his lure was as a photographer. He would suggest to young women that he was a professional photographer. He could take pictures. He could get them, you know, in the movies and to be models and things like this. So he would use this many times to lure his victims in. But again, you know, he started out with 8-year-olds and just worked his way up the system. And this is someone now where law enforcement has found over 2,000 individual photographs of women, many in engaged in sexual acts with him, children, women. They're trying to identify these women now, Dana, because they're so concerned that they already know they've got a handful of victims that he's good for. He's been identified over the years now by DNA. He thought he was so smart years ago, but he left DNA long before you and I ever knew it could be used to identify an assailant. So now he's been identified once, twice, three times, four times, and has keep coming up again. But the question is, of these 2,000-plus pictures, some women have come forward after seeing the picture and saying, "That's me, and even though I was a victim at the time, you know, I'm still alive." But others, law enforcement, just don't know who they are. And Dana, this guy, this monster, this child molesting, murdering, no good sociopath is just one more candidate, one more poster boy for the one strike law. I mean, if America would have been smart enough, if California would have been smart enough to say, "Hey, wait a minute, this is a guy who literally almost beat to death an 18-year-old sexually, or an 8-year-old to sexually molest her. He should never see the light of day again." But over and over, he was able to beat the system. His mercury-like personality kind of slid in and slid out. He beat the system. He got back on the street. And Dana, what he did, every time he'd get arrested, he'd be held for a while, and then he'd be released. He'd go out and immediately find a victim and rape him and murder him. And I think this was his sociopathic way of punishing the system. It's like, "How dare you arrest me? I'll show you what I'm going to do to you for taking me to jail." So he went out and found another victim and attacked them again. And now law enforcement figures that he could be good for up to 50 during the time he was out on the street before he was finally incarcerated.
Yeah, wow, it's something. Clint Van Sant is here. We're talking about the dating game serial killer, Rodney Acala. And now I'm going to, you know, I started out when I introduced you about all those hats you wear, and I'm going to get you to put your profiler hat on. This goof would even, when he's attacking someone, he would resuscitate them, bring him back, and then attack them again. Talk about that from your profiler perspective.
Well, you know, Dana, there is no more powerful emotional aphrodisiac, let me say it like that, than the power of life and death.
Yeah.
You know, it was like when we had the D.C. snipers in the Washington, D.C. area, when they were looking down the scope of that rifle and they could pick any one of a dozen or two dozen people and decide who they were going to kill. Well, I think that's the same way, except much closer with Rodney Acala. In his case, he would take the victims, and, you know, there's a psychosexual aspect to what he was doing. He was getting, not only was he raping the women, which we know is a crime of power, dominance, and control, but he was also getting an emotional high, I think, from that, the ability to choke someone almost to the point of death, where they're gasping, where they're fighting for their last breath, where they're literally willing to do anything and everything he wants them to do, and he has that power over them, then he would let them gag and cough and spit and come back to life only to clamp down on them one more time and to take that. And can you imagine a personality that could sit over the top of a young child or a woman with a shoestring wrapped around their neck and just pulling that as tight as he can and getting enjoyment out of seeing that person literally die before him, lets her come back to life, and then takes that life away. And then when he became tired, when they became bored with watching that victim fight for their life, then he would murder them.
Yeah, it's something else. Now, there's even a connection with Roman Polanski. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing, too. This guy had, you know, he was an accomplished, he was a bright guy, you know,
yeah.
Depending who you talk to, he had an IQ 140, 160, so he was a very, very bright guy, and that may account for his ability to stay on the street for a while, too. But one of the things he did, you know, he studied photography, he studied filmmaking, and interestingly enough, he wound up studying under Roman Polanski.
Jeez.
And most know that Polanski was the guy who gave a 13-year-old girl drugs and champagne and then raped her and then fled the United States and hid away. Somebody that Hollywood, you know, eventually was going to welcome back almost as a conquering hero. Makes you want to quit going to see movies,
too. Yeah, absolutely. And like Whoopi said, well, it wasn't really rape, you know, and that just burned me up something fierce. Now, here we got a guy, again, and we're talking about the system, and you talked about the one-strike law, but here's a guy that, of course, is, you know, he used his years in jail, according to your article, to write a novel claiming his innocence. And then he sued the California prison system for not providing him with a low-fat diet and for an alleged slip-and-fall claim. The only thing that they should have provided him with was the electric chair, and I know that's not around anymore. What's going on with this?
You know, it's a shame we don't have old Sparky anymore. This guy, if there's anybody for a candidate to put him on a chair and not put a wet sponge on his head, this is the guy. I mean, the only thing is that he would probably almost enjoy it. That's what, I mean, I think this guy is so far over the edge that he would probably find some joy in his own death. To me, a guy like this, even though, you know, I mean, I would pay the electric bill to light him up because he has, in fact, been found guilty and he's been proven by DNA. So there's no question that this guy did what he's charged with on the crimes for which he's been convicted. But, you know, maybe the only way to really, truly punish a guy like this is to let him live out his life in prison. You know, you and I mean, I've known agents when I was in the behavioral science unit. They did, you know, interviews with killers all over the country. And I remember this one guy that a couple of agents in my unit interviewed in Washington State. And he was a child molester and killer. And at the time he came up for sentencing, he told the state of Washington, "You better give me the death penalty, because if you don't, I'm going out and I'm going to find more little boys and I'm going to rape them and I'm going to murder them and I'm going to keep doing it until you do something about it." Well, the state of Washington took him serious.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's no longer on this earth. And this guy and many others like him, I mean, just that we pay $25,000 to $50,000 a year to keep somebody like this in prison. You know, I'm not necessarily an advocate of capital punishment. I've argued it both ways in debates and things like this. But it's hard to for me to imagine that somebody like this can breathe air while so many victims that he has just horribly tortured and murdered don't have that same right.
Yeah, and I'm sure the cold case investigators are going through these pictures and looking at old cases, and like you say, the DNA is going to be an interesting aspect of this. But just the last comment before we finish up, Clint, is, and we started about it at the or talked about it at the beginning of the interview, you know, the media is all over healthcare and Dancing with the Stars and all this kind of crap. But why aren't we hearing more about a guy like this? And there's others out there too.
Oh, there's others like this too. I mean, you know, I mean, I can remember in the behavioral science unit, you know, when asked, we would say, well, in the United States, for example, there's at least 50 serial killers. I've seen other researchers have suggested they think that number is far greater, 100, 150. And when you get someone who, number one, is a serial offender, a serial rapist, a serial killer, and number two, when you get someone who is as sadistic as this individual is to put someone through this, I mean, this guy and many like him do not deserve the title of human being. And that you know, our friends, our family, our relatives, your listeners are out on the street, and knowing that there are other guys like him, you know, realize that, you know, in any given population group, probably 2 to 4% are sociopaths, psychopaths, antisocial personalities. And, you know, many of these don't necessarily commit crimes, but ones that do, ones that are as cold-blooded, this cold-blooded, calculating, killing machine like this guy is, the only thing he wanted to do was to get out and start killing again. And sometimes the only thing we can do as a nation, as a society around the world, is to really strongly consider a one-strike law. When someone commits a savage, brutal sexual act, an assault where it's absolutely proven that they did it, and where the you know, psychiatrists come in who are used to working with individuals like this, who examine him and who say this guy should not be turned loose on society again because he will commit these crimes over and over. You know, we need to listen to the system. We need to listen to the professional psychiatrists and others who deal with guys like this. Dana, we need to lock him up and throw the key away.
Absolutely, I agree. And you can find out more about Clint's articles by going to newsvine.com or clintvanzant.newsvine.com. And don't forget the Silent Bodyguard at livesecure.org. It's $4, and it certainly can save a life. Clint, as always, thank you, sir.
Thank you. Be safe.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Clint Van Zandt. And, I thought it'd be an interesting story to share with you. It's one that, again, we haven't heard much about, but one that we need to learn more about. Another story that hasn't made the media the way that it should is the unsolved murder of Lacey Claire Gaines. And we're going to talk to her aunt and uncle and former L.A. Felony Crimes Prosecutor Robin Sachs here when we come back about that. And a little later on, Blink from Blink on Crime will tell us more about that poor indigent broke Casey Anthony and what's happening with her case. This is the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back, and this is the Dana Pretzer Show. I prefaced a little bit. Is that the right word for this? The story of Lacey Claire Gaines, who was born on December 1st, 1989, and was murdered, sadly, December 7th, 2009. And we're going to talk a little bit about her case tonight with her aunt and uncle, Larry and Cherry Simpson, and, of course, former felony prosecutor from L.A. County, Robin Sachs. Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Let's start with Larry. I can't think, and I know with your family, it seems that sometimes if there isn't bad news, there's no news at all, and we all go through strife in our lives. But I'm looking at a picture of a beautiful young girl here whose life was taken. The case is still open. We're having you know, we're not hearing much about it. And again, if anyone has any information about this murder, please contact the Justice Police Department or go to the website villageofjustice.org. Tell us a little bit about Lacey Larry Simpson, please.
Yeah, she was actually a very quiet girl and very sweet. Every time we saw her, she seemed to be always glad to see us. And she was kind of withdrawn and not the person you'd expect to get in any kind of trouble. And she seemed to do very good in school when she was younger, and she was very intelligent. We liked her a lot. It's just really, really sad.
Well, it's beyond words, Cherry. Your family. Again, my condolences to everyone involved in this case, and you as an advocate for victims, and of course, with your daughter, who we've talked about many times on this program here, and now this. It always amazes me to see the strength of people like yourselves. If you could, Cherry, tell us a little bit more about Lacey and how you got the news that she'd been murdered.
Well, Lacey was an individual, and we loved her very much. She was also very funny. She used to call Larry my walking wallet. And she would always make it a point to see us if we were ever up in the Chicagoland area, even when we were up there for all the court thing goings on for Regan.
Right.
It wasn't unusual for Lacey to just pop in, and it was an effort on her part to do that. We really appreciated that. She spoke fluent French and Spanish, and she was beautiful and kind-hearted and funny. And we had been I was at the beauty parlor and my mother called.
Mm.
And she said that they had found Lacey murdered the night before, which was such a shock to all of us.
It's terrible.
She was Regan's babysitter, and of course the children, babysitter and their cousin. And it really hit hard. We didn't tell the children that the young ones how she died, because we didn't want to shock them. But they're pretty smart kids. They figured it out pretty quick, and it's just horrible. It's horrible news. I can't even imagine. It's the worst. It's the thing I've always dreaded, and now my brother's living.
Yes. What's the status of the investigation, Cherry?
As far as I know, they're not talking very much, and they're saying that they're waiting on a lot of evidence. Now, America's Most Wanted had called them, and they had told them that they were waiting on DNA. And I had gotten a call from Clear Channel Billboard, and they were willing to donate a billboard in the town of Justice. But the police told my brother and sister-in-law no, that it wasn't a cold case yet, that this would be something that would be done only for in the situation of a cold case.
Well, if I could interrupt for a second, Cherry, I want to go right to Robin Sachs, former L.A. ADA. And Robin, you're working on a case right now where the family is having a difficult time getting information from the police. I do understand from the investigative aspect, as far as you can release some things and you can't release others, but comment, if you could, about this case and the difficulty in general with families and investigations. We're starting to see more of this, and families should be kept in the loop, so to speak, or am I wrong?
Hey, Dana, you hit the nail on the head, as always. I wouldn't expect anything less from you. I mean, that's the thing that's so atrocious, is here you have a family who is going through the trauma, the loss, the horrific pain, having all the questions that we as a society and the public want to know, and answers we want to know, and are actually entitled to the information, are being denied. In California, we have a law called Marcy's Law. In that law, it requires that law enforcement, prosecutors, etc., are supposed to advise families of pertinent information and the strides that that have been accomplished and the steps that have been accomplished and the results of any tests and outcomes of any tests and hearings and questioning. And yet what happens is that prosecutors and law enforcement end up hiding behind the integrity of the investigation, saying we are not going to let the family know because it's somehow going to affect the investigation. And with all due respect, I mean, I was a prosecutor, and yes, the case and the case is of utmost importance to the prosecutor in terms of let's make sure we can prosecute this case. But what about the balancing of that? I mean, here you have in Lacey's case, I mean, and you also have in the cases that I'm working on right now, like you've mentioned to it, Amber Dubois, where we are dealing with a case where a family has a public memorial and a private funeral service where they are going to be actually burying the remains of their child and are going to have to be forced to bury their child without answers. Now here, and just like Cherry mentions, I mean, this is a murder that happened in December of 2009. We are practically a quarter through 2010. At this point, I mean, even if there are not answers and conclusions, status checks, where do we stand? What's going on? Where? How are we progressing? What's the next step? Are certainly answers to questions that the family is more than entitled to know.
Larry Simpson, I'm totally baffled with the what Cherry said about the billboard and the police not allowing it. Comment further on that, if you could, please.
Well, I think as we made clear, we're not. I mean, I can understand people looking for information. We're not. Cherry and I, at least, are not really looking, we'd like to know, but we're not looking for information. We're not expecting the police to certainly call us or anybody to even call us and tell us what's going on or anything that's important. That what we're interested in is what we can do to help.
Right.
And I think with Cherry's background and our abilities, we've tried to do what we can to, you know, shine a light on this, so to speak, and, the billboards and maybe sending out flyers or rewards and all these other things you can do. And all of it's met with just nothing. And they don't seem to be interested at all, almost to the point where you start to believe that maybe somebody doesn't want to solve this case. As ludicrous as that sounds,
right,
you start to think that. And I don't want to play cop, and neither does Cherry. We're not trained in that. But we're fairly intelligent, and you know, we can use our common sense, and when you're constantly just turned away, and I do not understand why you don't want to put a billboard up.
Yeah.
You know, other than you just don't want a bunch of phone calls.
Well, yeah, and I'm totally baffled with this, and we'll get back to Robin in a few minutes about that. But Cherry, you're not walking into the police department demanding answers, but you're asking that maybe some publicity about this case be sent out there, because like with programs like Crime Stoppers and billboards and shows like this and other shows, the more people that know about it, the better chance that someone will come forward with some information. I haven't got much hair left on my head, but I'm scratching it on this one. The Village of Justice Police Department, again, the head detective Plotke, I hope I'm saying that right. There's information on the show notes, the link, as far as if you have any information, how to get a hold of him. But what type of a police department are we talking about? Small, big? Is there an issue here where they may not be used to doing investigations like this?
Well, I looked it up online, and it's a city of 12,000, and they have 28 sworn officers. And Detective Plotke's been with the department, I believe, for 10 or 12 years. A few years ago, he did win an award for being head detective. And I know that John Douglas has called twice, and they've not returned his call. I know that America's Most Wanted has called several times, and they've only returned their calls once. They have not returned the calls from the Clear Channel people. And the interesting thing that we came upon after David Lohr wrote the article is there's a review on the Yahoo Apartments Guide that says that Lacey was murdered by the maintenance man. And this was written by somebody that lives there, and this isn't the first time that I've heard that theory. I heard it early on, and In fact, it was one of the few days right after the beginning the detective told me that they couldn't do very much more unless they had a confession, which, you know, I don't know what that means. And then I'd also heard that they were waiting for DNA, and I specifically told, you know, when I was asked this by the America's Most Wanted and then also by another advocate from Illinois Victims, and I said, well, has anyone asked them when they sent it in? Because they knew that recently Megan Toohey of the Chicago Tribune had done an article on the DNA kits that were sitting on the shelves for the rape victim.
Right.
I wondered if maybe this wasn't just for rape victims.
Yeah.
The detective had told me early on that there wasn't enough evidence to convict. I don't know. I'm scratching my head, too. It's uncomfortable.
Oh, man. You know, Robin Sachs, I've been policing almost 28 years, and I would be booted out on my rear end if I came to a victim and said, I don't think we've got enough to convict this person. First of all, that's not your place as a police officer. Comment on that, please. This just sounds goofy to me.
Oh, my God. You know, Dana, I'm jumping out of my chair right now. And I'm sitting and I'm pacing and I'm going to stand and put my foot through a wall with that one because it's crazy. It's absolutely ludicrous. First of all, you say it absolutely right. Number one is that it's not the job of the detective or police officer to decide what's going to meet the standard for conviction. I mean, the investigation is the investigation, and the detective brings and presents the case to the DA, and let the DA decide what they have enough for a conviction, number one. And number two is, here you are, I mean, in the scenario to, I mean, the approach when it comes to a homicide must be a no stone goes unturned approach. I mean, this isn't dealing with a petty theft. I mean, we in our society, I can appreciate and understand not putting resources towards, you know, a low-level drug offense or a DUI or a bar fight, or if you will. But, I mean, you're talking about a murdered individual with no evidence to explain or justify why, no clues. I mean, every bit of resources needs to be put into solving this crime. And then, you know, I hate to say it, but one of the things that, you know, I've been looking at and, you know, Dana have been talking about a lot are all these cases of missed opportunities. I mean, is this going to be another one of those cases where it's going to be, oh, all the signs and symptoms were there, but no one bothered to pick up the piece of paper to take a look at it. No one bothered to interview anyone to go decide whether or not there was a correlation, and no one bothered to do anything, and then more innocent people become victimized. It's atrocious.
Yeah, Larry and Cherry Simpson are here along with Robin Sachs, and we're talking about the Lacey Claire Gaines case, who was found murdered December 7th, 2009. And by no means, please don't get me wrong, I'm not criticizing because I don't know all the facts, but when I'm hearing what I'm hearing, Larry, there's, again, Robin is pacing back and forth and wanting to put her fist through a wall, and so am I, although my wife would be quite upset if I had to do that here. It's got to be frustrating for family members. Again, like you say, you're not looking for answers. You're just looking for even a commitment to say, yeah, we're investigating this. And without the proper media coverage, America's Most Wanted, gosh, you can't get any better than that. How frustrated are you?
Well, Mary, but I want to say something about, so people will understand that where justice is, this is not a small little town, like, you know, Barney Fife out in the middle of the countryside.
Right.
This is kind of like, I'm sure Robin will understand, to Los Angeles, where you have the city of Los Angeles, the county of Los Angeles, you have Chicago, and you have Cook County, you have all these little teeny towns, and they're all connected to each other.
Right.
This particular little enclave is a lot of industrial running along the side of the main expressway that goes through Chicago. This apartment complex, and this should be something to note, and I think it has something to do with the reaction of the police or whatever. The apartment complex is fairly large. I don't know how many, Cherry may know how many residents are in this apartment complex, but it's large. It is, I'm for sure, the largest in the City of Justice by far.
Right.
And probably one of the most powerful people in that small little community is there. And it may be that's why they don't want this thing publicized so much. Somebody's afraid that it's going to affect their, you know, economic interests.
Yeah, yeah, and, you know.
That's a very, yeah. Sorry, Dana, go ahead.
No, no, because I think you're going to say just exactly what I was going to say. Go ahead, Robin.
No, what I was going to say is actually it's very interesting. I'm also involved in the case right now in Los Angeles here with the case of Amy Beck, who is, most of you, no one would know about it unless you're in L.A., which is a teacher who's been involved with a 14-year-old boy and admitted to having sexual assault. To having a sexual relationship with him, and now is going to be pleading guilty in court on Thursday. Just got off the phone with her lawyer, actually a couple hours ago. And the thing that's so interesting is that, in the last 2 weeks, Burbank, which is an enclave of Los Angeles, kind of like what you're describing with justices, and they, you know, that you hear the superintendent of the schools and the police chief and all these people say, this is such an unusual crime that's happening here. Our statistics are so low. And I have three different victims that I know of from Burbank who have had crimes there, and yet they are sitting there going on the news saying this is an aberration, and it's not. But the hiding and the machinations that go on behind the scenes are even more frightening, which then impedes the process even more because of wanting to have the appearance of being such a safe, amazing place. And that pecuniary gain and that financial gain adds a whole other level of corruption and disgust that, frankly, you would only expect from Chicago.
You got it. Sounds like Aruba here, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But anyway, Cherry, give us another link or two about where we can find more information and how people can help.
Sure. Well, there's a website that's at www.lacygaines.com, and on there you'll find links to everything that's pretty much online. Also, there's a www.my.opera.com/LaceyClaireGaines. If you just Google Lacey Gaines, I mean, we have a Facebook fan page
yep.
with over 1,500 people. We have a petition that we've tried to get signed. I think an interesting thing to have everybody Google is the name of this these apartments. The Sun Lake Apartments, because from the descriptions of the reviews that I've read on all the different websites that help to rank them, it sounds to me like some extremely dangerous complex. Two school districts were suing them at the beginning of the school year because they were forcing the students to stand out in the street to catch the bus instead of letting them come in the way that they had for the last 20 years.
Oh, boy.
And they talk about maintenance men spying on people, you know, all kinds of hoods and crack type things going on in there. So I don't know if somebody's afraid or what it is. It just, I know that they've only had one other murder in justice that I could find on the internet, and that was 10 years ago. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on, but it's making me nervous. I mean, who doesn't call back John Douglas?
Yeah, exactly. No, I couldn't agree more, and let's hope that, you know, our interview tonight is looked at, and you know, feel free to contact whoever you want, because this story needs to be told and this investigation needs to be done. Anyway, thank you guys. I appreciate it.
Wait, Dana, before you cut us off, can I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
Also, just along those lines, I mean, the power of Cherry knows more than anybody else in this universe, probably. Cherry knows the value of social media and social networking and so forth. And so the blogging and the linking to sites is extremely important from your listeners to be able to connect the dots so that people and put the pressure on the people to at least do the investigation that the family deserves.
Absolutely. I agree. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, that's the story of Lacey Claire Gaines. And whether it's ego, whether it's incompetence, whether it's whatever, God, you know, when you talked about the community not wanting bad PR, it made me think of Aruba. You know, who knows? We're going to come back in a minute with our sister blogger, Blink from Blink on Crime, with an update on that poor indigent Casey Anthony. And what Blink is doing to help Casey pay her legal bills. No, that's not true. We're going to talk about recent discovery in that case, and that's coming up here on The Dana Pretzer Show. We'll be right back. You know, one of our sister bloggers is the Blink on Crime website, blinkoncrime.com, and Blink from Blink on Crime is here with an update on the Anthony case. Now, ABC allegedly gave Casey Anthony $200,000 for photo rights or something like that, and I'm not sure after now they've spent a whole bunch of money, I'm talking about ABC, on Kate Gosselin's hair on Dancing with the Stars, if they'll be able to come up with any more money for Casey. So I think Blink is starting a penny drive for, no, she's not. Blink, what's going on with this case?
Wow, Dana, I'm going to try, first of all, good evening.
Hi.
I'm going to try really hard not to use the word bombshell.
Okay.
In theory, it really is.
Tot Mom.
A lot going on.
How about Tot Mom is banned from this show. We don't use Tot Mom. We don't
well,
use.
I've created Tot Pop.
Oh, I thought you were calling I thought you were calling him Pop Tart last show. But anyway, Tot Pop, Pop Tart, whatever.
Right, que sera. so much has happened since we spoke last, which really seems like a bit ago, but. As far as using the word alleged regarding ABC paying Casey Anthony $200,000.
I'm being nice.
Yes. Well, you can actually remove it from your vernacular because Jose Baez himself has admitted that the payment of $200,000 came from ABC during the indigency hearing. And ABC has subsequently put out a statement that not only did they pay that, but they paid it for a extensive library, I'm air quoting now, of video and imagery. But it was paid to not just Casey Anthony, but it said several owners.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't even know who was all paid. I would make the assumption that it was her family, because in a subsequent interview I did read the public relations person from ABC did say members of the relatives of Casey. So as far as the amount that was paid out in total, we have no idea. We just know that she's been paid over $200,000. And one of the things that I think is really suspect, unfortunately, is that Mr. Baez has given a sworn testimony that there is no other monies or monetary commitments from that agreement.
Mm-hmm.
But in my background in licensing and imaging, what I can say is the way their statement reads is that those materials are available not just to ABC, but to all of their franchises or all of their broadcasting platforms. So in theory, it means that there could be royalty agreements associated with this that would specify limited use, meaning one of their companies could only use it for a print article, or one of them could use it for an online article or an interview. But normally in those agreements, they contain what's called royalty fees, which would mean that every time that image is accessed, regardless of the platform, somebody is going to be getting a paycheck.
Were you shocked to see the ruling come forward that the state would now pay for part of her defense, so to speak?
Not at all.
No, I wasn't either.
No. I think that it was the right call, and I think people are very emotional right now regarding this, and I understand. I mean, I share the sentiment, but the reality is Judge Strickland's obligation is to progress due process. And unless there's anything egregious in that, you know, Jose Baez would put that he paid his mother, you know, $20,000 for chauffeuring somebody. It's really not his obligation to look into, you know, kind of the backside of this. It is the Florida Bar's obligation, however, to really understand if these attorneys are, you know, under ethical violations for these payments. And in my personal opinion, without question, there certainly is an argument for that.
There's Florida is as kooky as you can get. Now, I'm using that term loosely here when it comes to discovery, that we're learning a lot about this case that no other state would allow, so to speak, although I'm pretty sure we're not hearing everything, but there's a whole bunch more discovery that's come out, and I want to get you to talk about that a little bit.
Sure, there is. And no doubt, Dana, I don't know if in your recollection, but this case, in terms of discovery and public information, is really unparalleled in any cases that we've worked on. I mean, you can just find information and you know, the discovery process is different in this state probably than most. What I think is really important that came out today from the discovery, one of the biggest issues, you know, Tim Miller is a friend of Scared Monkeys and Blink on Crime.
Yep.
And his actual testimony came out today, his interview from December of 2009. And what he said was that while he was in the Anthony home, and he had worked a few days on working for a, what we'll call a live Kaylee, it was clear to him, and I'm paraphrasing, but it was clear to him that there were going to need to be other options, meaning locating a potentially deceased child. And what he did was he brought this up to George and Cindy and basically brought in a map and said, you know, what we need to do is we need to have Casey contribute to the conversation. We need to have a starting point. And what I'd like her to do is kind of, you know, if she was going to tell us if that was in fact the case. And mind you, he was met by Jose Baez at the door.
Right.
When he came down there to search, and in 1,100, this is a quote, in 1,100 searches, he had never been told by an attorney or a family member of a search that he was invited into that he could not speak to the last person to see the victim alive.
Jeez.
And was told if he had any questions for Casey that they needed to be routed through Jose, and that, you know, those were going to be few and far between, certainly. But at any rate, he busts out the map of Orlando and says, I really would like, you know, we got to talk about some practicality here. And in essence, George goes and gets Casey out of the bedroom. Tracy McLaughlin of Leonard Padilla's employee was there at the time, but she was in the bedroom, did not come out, and said, here's my plan. You know, where would you mark the X on the map if you were going to guess where we might start a location? Casey gets up from the table, goes back in the bedroom. Cindy throws everybody out of the house and says, I thought, you know, we were looking for a live Kaylee. And, you know, that whole, you know, idiocy ensues. And, I mean, it's really part and parcel of, I think, the compassion that was shown to George and Cindy was huge. I've heard you, you know, I know you spoke with, I think, George offline, and I think you may have interviewed Cindy on the program.
Yep.
And these are people that elicited a great degree of compassion, both from you, from the public, and from myself. These days, Dana, I'm not feeling so compelled.
Nope. No, I'm not either. No, absolutely.
One of the major things, which I'm not really seeing anybody keying on in the press, was an interview that came out by a woman that was a volunteer for the Anthonys, but also of Kid Finders, a woman by the name of Linda Tinelli. And we know from experience that sometimes the state slips into the discovery things that, I don't know if they want to see if we're asleep at the wheel, but very interesting conversation between Linda Tinelli and Sergeant John Allen of the Orange County Sheriff's Office. He, and if you don't mind, I'm going to read you a quick excerpt because I think we were all pretty thrown.
Yep.
He was talking to her and on the discovery at about page 14. He asks her about the relationship or conversations that she may have had with Dominic Casey, who is, as you know, the private investigator that was hired literally by all three parties,
mm-hmm.
by the Anthonys, by Jose Baez, and also by Casey Anthony. And he says, in regards to speaking with him, did he ever, and I'm looking through some emails, email exchanges between Dominic and other people who are helping him in regards to this investigation, did he ever talk to you about hitting the big? Let me read from here.
Okay.
The big boys and girls at the top of the trafficking escort Medicaid fraud scheme and these people being singing.
Mm-hmm.
Her response is no. You know, have you ever talked about that? And then he says, did he ever talk to you about Casey enjoying a lifetime club and getting in too deep and having to get out of this lifetime club and get herself into protective custody? No. Answer no. This is unbelievable. Has he ever said to you that he made up a story. Let's see. Kaylee was flown on a private jet from Orlando Airport to San Juan, Puerto Rico, and held there until plans were made to take her out of the country to Colombia. She was then taken across the border into Venezuela to Puerto San Rosa near Puerto Cuma, knowing there would be no extradition or investigation possible due to the prevailing diplomatic situation. No other details can be released until such time Kaylee can be positively identified and an extraction is in play. Did he ever tell you that? No. Now, have you ever heard that?
Mm-hmm. No.
He's specifying that he's reading an email.
Yeah.
In the part of that interview. And so apparently that is somewhat of a quote. I'm going to just progress down a little bit.
Sure.
Where he specifically says, you never either heard one of them saying anything about, let me find it here, and coming up with something to play a trick. No one ever said anything about playing a trick on Mr. Baez. Answer no. Because this up because he's gotten money. Answer no. He never talked to you about Geraldo going to Puerto Rico and providing money to anybody. Answer who? Geraldo Rivera. This is news to you? Yes.
Wow.
To me, if I'm going to use the B ends with shell word, I'm looking at Discovery going, what possibly does Orange County Sheriff's Office have that they're reading from that is literally potentially implicating Dominic Casey, Geraldo Rivera, and Jose Baez?
Yep. Well, we've all seen Geraldo Rivera and Jose Baez together, and the flags went up, in my opinion, a long time ago with that. But what happened, I think, media-wise with this case, and I fell for it a little bit too, was Leonard Padilla. Everyone fell all over this guy until they saw that he, you know, may be this bounty hunter and may have a lot of money. But when this case comes, he's playing the media like a cheap $3 violin, and he changes his mind and says something different every time, and the media keeps picking up on that, where these other side stories are out there and they're not focusing on them. And again, there's a lot more to be told here.
Dana, you could not be more right, and that's an excellent point. Just tonight, you know, the story that I referenced to you about Tim Miller and the Anthony home, just tonight, Leonard was on Nancy Grace and said it didn't happen.
There's a shock, yeah.
Right? And I've seen this guy, and I will be the first to tell you that I promoted the fact that I felt his heart was in it for the right reasons in the beginning.
In the beginning.
In the beginning. And really that was largely due to the fact that I had developed a friendship and still have a friendship with Tony Padilla, who is Leonard's niece. And I can tell you, and I feel comfortable saying, that his intentions were absolutely pure. I mean, this is a guy that wanted no media. He didn't even want to be, you know, associated with it. Leonard had asked him for a favor. He's a family guy.
Yep.
And unfortunately, what has happened is Leonard, I mean, he is all about, how do I turn the spotlight back onto myself?
Yep.
And unfortunately, it creates, again, that circus-like atmosphere, and I'm really kind of tired of everybody running around without any level of accountability, saying whatever they want. You know, the reality is, it does have an impact.
Yep.
And it can't be, at the end of the day, it's so dangerous that you have, first of all, from a journalistic perspective, you have ABC, you know, owned by Walt Disney, first of all, okay? So the mecca of things about children and childhood adventures and dreams and activities in the very hub, Orlando, if you will, that have literally funded an accused murderer's defense.
Yep.
Of her 34-month-old. You're not going to get around that. That agreement at some point, and I'm going to tell you who's going to bring it up. John Morgan, in the civil case of Zenaida Gonzalez versus Casey Anthony.
Good.
That will come out. That gentleman will absolutely bring that agreement into play. I've said it from the beginning, and it's not about being right, but the civil case will develop more information that will expose, you know, the potential ethical, you know, and moral violations that we're really interested in to worm its way into the criminal case and to see what's really going on, in my opinion.
I couldn't agree more. And we're going to end up here quickly in a minute or two. Blink from Blink on Crime is here. But I agree with you when it comes to Padilla. And when I interviewed him the first time, I agreed with you. When I interviewed him the second time, the hair in the back of my neck stood up because he had turned into more or less just a carnival barker wanting to get people to come over and buy his BS. And the media is doing this. The crime shows are doing this, and he keeps sucking people in. Where you're reading tonight, Discovery, and we're not going to use that term B-shell, but we will, it is big. It's huge. And there's a huge story behind this yet that we're not hearing. And again, and you said it so well the last time I interviewed you, the focus is being taken away from the true victim in this case is little Kaylee Marie Anthony, and is being, you know, focused on goofballs like Leonard Padilla, Geraldo Rivera, Jose Baez, the state. You know, I don't know if this thing will ever go to trial, at least in my lifetime. It may not, but the big story is, you know, how this is being handled, and the media should be ashamed of themselves.
Well, I don't want to carte blanche the media, but I do agree with you overall, because we're almost at levels of egregiousness now,
yep,
where ABC has set the bar to the fact that it is obscene. But you're right. There is the focus is on the sensational. For instance, when you have FTV, Kathy Bellick reporting on, you know, George's affair, and then there's speculation that they're trying to avoid the fact that ABC made these payments, etc. And the focus absolutely needs to be on Kaylee. With regard to Leonard, one of the things that I have really, you know, when you say we're not talking about some of the things that are going on behind the scenes, I couldn't agree with you more. And one of those issues is, I can tell you for a fact that Leonard Padilla is on the phone with Jose Baez almost on a daily basis and has been for months.
Yep.
Additionally, Todd Macaluso from the defense team, and this is a breaking news because I've not released this before, but Todd Macaluso was, at the end of August of this past 2009, visited Leonard Padilla in his office on a weekend, while he was still an active defense council member. I want to know why.
Yep. Well,
you know, enough of saying, you know, oh, well, that's just, you know, crazy Leonard. He's, you know, he says this or does that. This is, from my integrity perspective, this is somebody that I promoted initially. So I do feel an obligation to follow it through. I don't understand that. You know, pick a side, whatever that might be, but really, you know, a month ago, he's offering the Anthony's money to get out of their foreclosure situation. To what we found out last week, they've actually probably been paid a substantial amount of money in addition to their daughter. So they're not hurting.
No. And what's the old saying, Blink? If it walks like a duck and it talks like a duck, there's something pretty quacky about this whole situation. And, you know, ABC, there may not be dancing with too many stars here much longer if someone finally picks this up. And
it's not over, Dana. Believe in my heart of hearts. I've seen outcries. Bill O'Reilly covered last night, you know, the ridiculousness of it. Not that he's necessarily the benchmark for change in terms of, you know, journalism, but I truly believe a few of the contacts I had today with a different network were, they were in a meeting. They were all called into a meeting. And I mean, this is a major production, a major show with major ratings. They were all called into a meeting and they were schooled. They were said unequivocally, this doesn't happen in our industry. This doesn't happen in our show. And you may be getting questions from cases that we're looking at profiling and, you know, publicizing. So you need to be clear that if they're coming to you thinking that's a standard, no way. So sure. I really feel strongly that this isn't the end of that error on in judgment with ABC.
It ain't over until the fat girl sings and she's not even up to the mic yet. Thanks, Blink.
I agree.
BlinkOnCrime.com is the website. We'll talk to you again soon.
Great, Dana. Be well.
Bye-bye. And this stinks to high heaven. And for the love of God, get Padilla off the air, because he's got nothing more to offer. He's playing you like that cheap violin. That's it. That's tonight's show. Remember, our webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com or scaredmonkeys.com, where you can listen to the show. You can pick up on the daily commentary archives. You can send me hate mail. You can send me love mail. But just don't send me your laundry. I don't even know what that means. That's it. Thank you all. Good night.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening. Thank you.